Welcome to another episode of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, a podcast about relievers. I'm your host, Callan Elsliger, joined as always by my friends Rick Graham and Jay Crumpler. Guys, how you doing today?
Doing all right. Sweating out the Celtics game right now, but you know, this is a nice little break from that to focus on, you know, some reliever news. You know, a couple injuries this week again, and a couple guys returned at least, so some good news there.
Definitely can agree with the break right now. I'm just waiting for Zelda to come out at 9 p.m. Pacific time, my time right now, so I'm just sort of trying to do anything to distract me for just a couple more hours. I was at work all day, and you know, it was pretty hard to get stuff done thinking about staying up all night and playing video games. Haven't had that feeling in a while, but you know, always baseball's always a great distraction.
Yeah, I'd say the same, but I'm trying to distract myself from a Yankee 8-0 deficit against Tampa Bay Rays with this podcast, so I can't say it's fully the same here, but you know, that's the beauty of the season. We'll get him back tomorrow on Friday with Garrett Cole back in the mound, or so I hope. But on today's episode, we are going to dive into some hold candidates. We've done a little bit of risers with closers. We haven't done as much for the next man up. And with all the hype around a certain Baltimore Oriole reliever on Twitter, we decided maybe it's time we actually, you know, talk about him and talk about how good the season's. So we're going to get into him, see what his what's really given rise to success and other guys you need to be monitoring, keeping an eye on, just on how great of a season they're having in terms of hold candidates. But as always, we're going to start off with some news and notes. First, we'll start off on the injury front. Jose Alvarado is part of the big deficit of this week in terms of relievers. He got placed on the 15-day IL with left elbow inflammation. We've talked about it all season, how he's been the clear best reliever in Philadelphia, took over of that closer job. So without him, it goes back to that same question we had all preseason. Craig Kimbrell or Sir Anthony Dominguez? And Rick, we'll start with you. Who takes over for a closer? Who gets the majority of saves now that Alvarado's gone?
I want to say neither, to be honest. I really like what Gregory Soto's been doing. But I don't think they're ready to make that switch yet based on his usage. So it's probably, I mean, Craig Kimbrell's already been kind of sneaking into some save situations, and he's been okay. He's not the Craig Kimbrell of past, but he's not as bad as, you know, Craig Kimbrell's been in the past few years. So I think he's serviceable. This Alvarado injury, though, really does, I mean, he was their best reliever by far, and that's brings their bullpen down pretty big time. So, you know, I think this might be a situation where if you're in Fab League, I think I'm just throwing a couple bucks on everyone and seeing who you can get. Because I know in a lot of my leagues already, but in the 16-teamers, these three aren't available, Soto, Alvarado, or Kimbrell. So if one is available, I'd take a shot just because it's, you know, there's going to be some good opportunity here, and Alvarado's probably going to be out for a while. So, but I think I like Soto, then Kimbrell, then Sir Anthony right now.
Interesting. I didn't think you'd choose Soto over the other guys, but I think you guys might even be underselling Jose Alvarado as the best closer or the best reliever on the Phillies. I think he might have been the best reliever in baseball throughout the year so far. Absolutely incredible that he didn't walk anybody before getting injured. Pretty crazy. But so that's a huge loss for the Phillies. And I feel like right now with Kimbrell having gotten the three saves outside of Jose Alvarado's five, I feel like that's a pretty good indicator that he's going to be the closer. I know he has like a 7 ERA right now, which is really unappealing, but it's definitely due to a pretty unfortunate home run to fly ball ratio and a pretty unfortunate BABIP. And I think that should turn around a little, but I would have my money on Kimbrell. I still am a big fan of Sir Anthony, and he's really turned it around a lot since starting off the season pretty terribly. But, you know, Gregory Soto might be the guy showing the best skills right now. So I don't know, maybe side with Rick, but right now it seems like the manager there has more favor in the veteran Kimbrell.
Do you think Matt Strom plays into this conversation at all? We saw him really look good as a starter. I was at the game on Sunday when he came into the eighth inning of a 3-run lead, got him out of the inning, and they brought him out for second inning. So technically he gets a save, but He's just got some good strikeout stuff, and he's pitching really well this season. I could see him getting into a high leverage role. Does he, you think he'll work his way in, or is he probably fourth on that list?
Yeah, I mean, there are some options here between him too. He had, you know, Connor Brogdon's got, you know, I think he can maybe factor into. I still think that they'll go with the guys who are more experienced in the role, which is the, you know, Kimbrel, Sir Anthony, Soto trio. But yeah, Strom could be that guy who finishes off the game going, you know, finishing off two or three innings. And, you know, as if he comes in the seventh and he's cruising, and, you know, they might as well just stick with him. So I think he might be someone who you can, you know, still have some value in mixed leagues just because of his ability to work more than one inning.
Yeah, but that also leaves the question that, like, he's not going to go multiple days in a row.
True.
So when he does get that save, I doubt they push him 2 days in a row, especially because they already started him at the beginning of this season, and he's already, like, surpassed half of the innings he threw last year. So I don't know if they want to push him too hard. And yeah, I don't think he's got the best skills in this bullpen either. So he could definitely have a few of those multi-inning saves factor in every once in a while, but I don't see him being, like, the closer throughout the rest of the year.
We'll rapid fire the last couple of injuries and just see if any of them have some sort of a, you know, fantasy viability for you or have some impact. Cutter Crawford was placed on a 15-day IL with a left hamstring for the Boston Red Sox. Aaron Loop goes to the IL for a strained right hamstring for the Angels. Caleb Fielbar for the Twins, 15-day IL with a strained right oblique. And Gary Clevinger for the Tampa Bay Rays, torn right ACL for the season. It was pretty... You knew it was bad. You saw him immediately go down. They had to bring, a wheelchair on the field to get him off the field. So he's out for the season for the Rays. So a lot of American League injuries this week for middle reliever and depth arms, I'd say, for them. Do any of those have any sort of fancy impact or cause anybody to rise up for you, especially for holds?
I think the Teal Bar one hurts a little bit for Minnesota. He's been someone that they've trusted for a while, and he's been one of the more underrated pitchers in the game. So that probably opens things up a little bit more for, you know, Jax and Lopez are already going to be big factors there. So, you know, they could give Giovanni Moran a chance, or, you know, Emilio Pagan's pitched a little bit better lately, so maybe he works his way back into some sort of high leverage role.
Yeah, I feel like Moran's probably the one that gets the biggest boost there, just because he's the only lefty now. So they'll probably need him more so in high leverage situations or against lefty leaning lineups. But the big one for me is Cutter Crawford going down. He's not like a holds guy or a saves guy, but he was really putting in some great work out of the bullpen there. Just what was a guy that was very appealing to me, especially in points leagues where starts are limited and or as a spark, just his ability to go multiple innings. And he had a great strikeout to walk ratio. So I actually had him rostered in a couple of leagues, but so that was pretty disappointing to see him go down. But I don't think that really impacts the rest of that bullpen too much.
Let's go over to the transactions. We saw a big name back, our preseason saves favorite among the show. Raisel Iglesias was activated for the 15-day IL for the Atlanta Braves, and you saw him get thrown right back into the save mix. There's no other competition for saves. You think he's just a clear guy in right now, and Minter goes back to the high leverage setup man role?
Yeah, it should be that way, but I still think, especially early on, or, you know, the next few weeks, they're probably going to, you know, take it easy with Iglesias, and, you know, I could see Minter getting a save or two, probably more likely one save, you know, a week or you know, every other week. So I still think he's worth dropping in most mixed leagues, but you know, if you're in a deeper league and you know, I think Minter's he's pitched a lot better than his ERA shows, and I do think that there's some value there in the strikeouts and what should be low ratios, but it's going to be, yeah, Iglesias is going to be the closer moving forward.
I thought they would go easy on him too, and then they immediately used him in back-to-back days right after he was activated. So I don't know. Maybe the Braves are ready to just put him right back to work. But yeah, you mentioned Minter's ERA, 7.5 right now. Really not something that you want on your team. But, you know, it's it's about projecting how well they're going to pitch going forward. And I think Minter's pretty trustworthy, and he should be a great holds candidate and saves plus holds candidate. But yeah, I don't know if he's a guy that you want to continue to hold in a saves only league, especially when you have Nick Anderson there who could steal some save opportunities as well. But yeah, Raisel Iglesias is definitely a must roster in 100% of leagues.
Yes, completely agree. We've been hyping him up throughout the season. He was one of our favorite, at least of the early top five targets. So it's nice to see him get right back into the mix and take it over. If you have Minter in a holds league, don't drop him. He'll keep staying that eighth inning role, kind of the high leverage mixing with Nick Anderson. But saves league, I'd probably agree with you, Jake. He's a drop now. He's not going to be getting any saves outside of Raisel Iglesias has worked his two straight days or something like that. So some other transactions of note: Sam Henches was activated from the 15-day IL after left shoulder inflammation. Keegan Aiken, one of our preseason names because he was high up on PLV of one of his pitches, he was optioned to be minor leagues. Jimmy Herget, my prediction to lead the Angels in saves, shows how much I know. He was recalled from the minors, so the dream's still alive, fellas. The dream's still alive. Andre Piante, recalled from the minors for the Cardinals. Jake Diekman signs a major league contract with the Tampa Bay Rays to replace Clevinger. And Andrew Bilotti activated from 15-day IL. The same question we asked three other guys. Do any of these have sort of fantasy viability? Anything you're monitoring from these transactions?
Sam Henschkes, or Henschkes is, however you pronounce that, I apologize. But that's a name that I should know and you should know because he is, you know, he wound up being, I think, a top 15 holds guy for me last year at the end of the year. Really, really good lefty for the Cleveland bullpen. Definitely someone you want to look at if you're in holds leagues, especially with, you know, I don't think anyone in that bullpen's really pitched up to par what we were expecting. So he could move. I think he already has pretty much been thrown right into the holds mix. So definitely someone to look at.
Yeah, and then for a couple of the other guys, Jimmy Herget recalled. I mean, he was like possibly considered the best reliever in Anaheim last year, and it's not been the case this year. And he actually struggled when he was in the minors as well. So I don't have too much faith in him recovering his status there, especially with how Carlos Estevez and Matt Moore are pitching. And Piante was actually really good for the Cardinals last year in a breakout. He was one of the early guys that was sent down that we were really surprised about. So he could definitely work his way into the holds mix there. It's been a pretty tough start to the major league season for him, but he was very solid in AAA, and he was actually striking out a lot of guys, which is something he's never done in his career. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. And then Jake Diekman, my co-host in the Free Baseball podcast, said, sent me a tweet and was just like, "Oh, Jake Diekman got signed by the Rays. They're going to turn him into the next Billy Wagner or something." And I was like, "Yeah, sure. They are."
I feel like Jake Diekman's going to be a name we're going to be talking about in, if we're still doing this podcast a year or two from now, for who's that closer. Just a guy who's been on so many teams, and it's like, oh yeah, he was once did a little bit of things. He's just a guy who's been bouncing all around the league. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a name.
2020 that's on, like, with the A's was crazy.
Yeah, 2020 itself was just crazy. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I still want to hold on to the dream of Jimmy Herget being viable because I had that call on our preseason prediction show that he would lead the team in saves, and just because I wasn't fully trusting Estevez towards late in the season, I'll call that wrong. But I like the mention of Piante too. He's Presley's, you know, he's looking okay, better of late, but I'm not saying he'll take over the closer job, but he can move up, especially if Gallegos also being a bit inconsistent at times this year too. So let's go over to the risers and fallers and ranks. We talked about the transactions, but as usual, we'll go to the three up, three down. Rick, we'll start with you. Give me one riser in the ranks from the past week.
I'll start with Evan Phillips. I think, you know, he's really settled into the closer role there. And, like, you know, Dave Roberts was a little reluctant in the beginning of the season to put his best reliever in the closer role, but, you know, since returning from the paternity leave, he's allowed just one hit, two walks, striking out eight, and he has three saves, and he's five on the year. So Gratterall continues. You know, he's more of a, in a setup role right now. He hasn't, you know, he's going to be when Phillips isn't available, he'll close out games. But I don't think Gratterall needs to be rostered in leagues that don't count holds at this point. I think this is Phillips' show, at least for now. I'm sure they'll look at, you know, adding pieces throughout the year. That's what the Dodgers do. But I think Phillips is the guy now. And, you know, given what he did last year and what he's doing this year, he's definitely worth, you know, being rostered in pretty much every league.
Yeah, last year he had a 1.14 ERA across 63 innings. This year, 2.19, a full run higher, but he's striking out more batters than he did last year, walking the same amount of batters. He's pretty safe. Whatever he figured out last year, it has clearly carried over into this year. And as long as, like you said, as long as Dave Roberts trusts him over the rest of the bullpen or prefers to use him in the ninth inning, then he'll be very valuable because contrary to my hopes and dreams, the Dodgers have still been good. But yeah,
I think with the early victory lap or Bruiser Gratterall, I think that dream's over. Mm-hmm. Again, same thing we said about some other guys in the pen, AJ Minter. Don't drop him if you're in a saves holds league. Gratterall is still gonna be very good for that, but for saves only, it's clear Phillips taking the job. Like you said, he's come right back and gotten a few saves right away. It's his job to lose at this point, and happy to see that it's finally coming to how we were sort of hoping it to. So Jake, we'll go over to you. Who is someone who would rise in your ranks based on their past week?
Well, we'll go to the Dodgers rivals. We'll go to the Giants and we'll talk about Camilo Duvall. He was a guy that I was skeptical about coming into the season because of their signing of Taylor Rogers, who has not been able to recover what he lost after being traded at the deadline last year. And that sort of has left Duvall to have the closer role to himself. There's not too many options in that bullpen, with like Tyler Rogers being their best secondary option and everybody else having an ERA over 5. Tyler Rogers isn't really the closer type, but he is a great holds candidate. But Duvall has just been super dominant. Just his stuff is playing just as well as it has in the past. He's been going to his sinker a little more often rather than the cutter, and that has helped him get a lot of ground balls. He's up to a 63.5% ground ball rate, which is 30th amongst relievers. Very good in that department, and that pairs very nicely with his ability to strike batters out. He's at 33% right now, which is higher than it was last year and just about as high as it was in his rookie year when he wasn't really the closer. So I have a lot of faith that not only is he going to still be really good because his stuff is incredible, the guy throws gas and he's, like I said, gets a lot of strikeouts and ground balls, but also he doesn't have a lot of competition. It seems like Gabe Kapler is pretty set on trusting him in the ninth inning, and now he's sort of getting up there in age where he's like, he's 25 now, you're not really worried about his arm falling off or worried about restricting his innings, because now you've had him on the roster for 3 years, you're sort of getting into that those years of control. So it's might as well use him now or never. But yeah, I've a lot of faith that he's going to continue to be one of the most underrated relievers in baseball. I feel like he's what Camilo Duvall wish he could be, just on a slightly worse team.
Yeah, Camilo Duvall rose up to 15 for Rick in his ranks for this past week, and it's another guy who's started, he's continued to take that job and run with it. And everything Jake said is true. He's been really, really good of late. Rick, did you have anything more you wanted to add about him? Or?
No, Jake kind of nailed it there. You know, he probably could go higher. I think there's, you know, even with a couple injuries, there's a pretty, you know, just because he's at 15, I still do like him. And if you, like, you know, I would not mind rostering him at all. It's just, you know, he's, you know, the cutter and the slider are, you know, dominant weapons. And yeah, the sinker is, you know, a great ground ball pitch. So he's really, as long as he could just start, you know, limiting some of the hard contact, then I think we're getting somewhere there.
Yeah, and my riser for this week, it's going to be a knife to all three of our backs, because it affects our boy Pete Fairbanks. It's Jason Adam. You always know if Tampa Bay, when, you know, Fairbanks out, maybe they go to a committee. Maybe they don't stick with one particular guy. That's not the case. Jason Adam already has 4 saves this month on just 11 days into May. Yes, Pete Fairbanks is going to be back fairly soon. He started to play catch, and it seems like it's going to be a minimum stay on the IL. But with how good Jason Adam has looked, as much as we love him, I can't say for certain that they're going to just all of a sudden give the game the job right back to Pete Fairbanks. They might go to back to a lethal 1-2 in the back end and continue to be the best team in baseball at this point, have two dominant relievers in the back end of their pens. So that might hurt us with fantasy, but that makes Jason Adam rosterable in pretty much all leagues. Even if he's getting 50% of the Rays saves, that's a lot more saves than you're getting from a lot of guys. So I think Jason Adam, even when Fairbanks gets back, has put himself into pretty much must roster territory, and he's looked really, really good at this point. So I think he's a major riser. You guys have anything more you want to add about Adam? Do you share that opinion? You think Fairbanks comes back and takes the job right back, or is it going to go back to what we love about Tampa Bay?
I don't think it's going to go right back to Fairbanks. I don't know what Jake thinks, but I think it's this is the way that things work there. It's either going to be a committee or Adam's going to continue in the role. I mean, Fairbanks has been at his best when he's been in a setup role in the past. So I don't know. Maybe they just you know, bring him back and ease him into that role, or maybe they go to a committee. But I think Adam is right now the one that I would rather have on my roster.
I'll never quit my boy. I mean, I think Adam is sort of in that same boat as Evan Phillips, where it's like, not everybody really believed in last year's breakout, but they've really proven so far that it is real. He's got an ERA lower than it was last year. He's striking out more batters than he did, or just about the same amount of batters that he did last year. But the one concern I have is his fastball is down a mile an hour from last year. So that's sort of a big thing. There's a lot of underlying metrics like PLV and expected ERA that suggest he's been pretty unlucky so far. So that's my only concern. But, you know, the Rays know how to use their guys. I think the biggest hope for Fairbanks is that they do see Jason Adam as the best reliever, and they do the classic Rays thing of not letting him close out games. So then Fairbanks just gets to be the closer, even though he's not the best guy on there, because they prefer using their best closer in more of a high leverage role.
As these guys move up in the ranks, unfortunately, if how rankings work, people are going to have to fall. And this week we saw quite a few guys go down, including some guys who were at one point on the other side of this list. So, Jake, let's start with you this time. Who, in your mind, is the biggest faller from the past week?
I think it's got to be Kyle Finnegan. I don't know how he still has this role in Washington. He's been pitching absolutely awfully. He does have 7 saves, which is great, and especially on a team as bad as the Nationals, that's pretty incredible. The guy has a 6.75 ERA and a 1.95 WHIP. I don't know which is worse. I think the WHIP might be worse. That's terrible. He's struck out less than 20% of batters and walked more than 14% of batters, and he just gives up tons of hard contact and really doesn't have anything to make up for it. I don't know why they won't do it, but it's any day now we're going to see Hunter Harvey take over that role. So if you're looking for prospective saves, I think Hunter Harvey is that guy. He got the team's last save, so I do feel pretty confident that that is the start of him taking over that role. And right now he completely deserves it. He's got a 2.30 ERA and a 30% strikeout rate, doing basically exactly what you guys had both hoped throughout the preseason. So right now I got Finnegan dropping hard and Hunter Harvey sneakily rising, and hopefully we'll be in these ranks next week.
Yeah, yep. I would have to. I mean, it's Finnegan right when I thought, you know, I thought he was starting to kind of turn things around, and then he just, his blow ups are really bad, and it's, you know, they're not just one. Yeah, they're not just one or two runs. I mean, he really lets it loose. I think Harvey's been pitching really well lately. He got a save. Yeah, like you said, he got a save the next day. So I think I think it's too early to call that make that change. But I think that's, you know, a Harvey for Finnegan swap is definitely coming sooner rather than later.
As we're talking about this, I am currently going through my NFBC leagues and trying to see if Hunter Harvey is available, because I might want to go stash him. If you're in a deeper league, do that. If you're in a saves plus holds league, it's so tough to roster a second Washington National reliever because they're so not good. But I think if you want to try and get ahead of the game, he's worth an ad at this point, and I'm looking forward to having that call hopefully turn out in our favor. So go get yourself some Hunter Harvey. I think there's, he said it's only a matter of time before he takes on over. Rick, there's actually someone on the list who moved down more quote unquote spots over the past week. So who's your biggest faller from the past week?
So the biggest faller from this past week would be Andrew Chafin. And that one, you know, hurts a little bit because the underlying metrics are still good with him. I'm not ready to panic, especially in holds leagues, but just, you know, in saves leagues, the fact that he wasn't already the closer, you know, having, he had a, you know, a rough outing and they went to Miguel Castro the next day for a save, who also ended up blowing that save. But yeah, for Chafin, I feel like Joe Mantiply season might become all-star. Sorry, all-star Joe Mantiply season.
Thank you. Thank you,
might be coming back. And, you know, I don't know. It's just been a frustrating situation because I kind of do like all, I like Chafin, I like Mantiply, I like Castro, but it's like when they get into a save situation, none of them wants to, you know, they're just not converting these saves. So I think Mantiply might get the next situation or the next spot. And yeah, I will see. This is going to be a big week. You know, by the next time we talk, hopefully we get some more clarity on this. But yeah, Chafin's role, whatever, you know, his role was, it's not looking great right now.
What do you like about Castro right now?
What do I like about him right now? The fact that he's getting outs, pretty much. I know the underlying the underlying metrics aren't exactly showing anything. He isn't getting, you know, I thought we talked about, you know, going to Brent Strom, he's gonna work magic with his slider, and you know, he's gonna lead to more strikeouts and whatnot, which really hasn't yet. So I just think, you know, those are the only three that seem to be trusted, and even Mantiply didn't really, it kind of took him a minute when he came back off the IL. So you know, McGow's really kind of fallen, or McGuff's really been falling off that like committee. So I think it's those three, and it's one of the two lefties should be the closer, and yes, they should just stick with it.
Yeah, those are clearly the two best guys, and I think all-star Joe Mantiply probably deserves it, just with the way that Chafin's pitched this week, and Mantiply's looking like last year's Mantiply again.
Is Chafin still the guy you'd want most if you had the roster one Diamondback reliever?
I think so, just because he's been the guy getting the saves in the past. But I don't know. The big thing about Mantiply is that he doesn't walk anybody, and so far he has walked zero guys. So he's looking like Mantiply of old, and he's striking out more batters than he did last year. I feel pretty confident that he's going to either be the same as he was last year or better. And if that sort of consistency gives more faith to Torey Lovullo, then maybe that makes it. I don't know. It's hard. It's one of those things where it's like Chafin's got the higher strikeout ability. Mantiply might be more safe, but Mantiply hasn't gotten any saves while Chafin has five. So it's sort of hard to decide right now. Like, do you go with who the manager is using and who has gotten the saves in the past, or you go with the guy? You try to go with the prospective saves guy. So I think I would wait, you know, another week before I start to see, or just see who gets the next save and then go from there. But I feel like I'd prefer Mantiply there just because he's safer as the closer, not as the guy that I'd pick up.
Yeah. And a final faller for me, it's AJ Puck right now. And, you know, maybe defense is to blame for this, but Thursday and Saturday, he gave up five runs in an inning of work between the 2 days. He picked up a save on Wednesday, so maybe that solved some fears. He's still striking guys out, but we know the Marlins have kind of been, they're ready. They've got a bunch of relievers in the back end. And one of the guys we're going to mention later on in the holds guys has been having a great season, starting to really rise up in terms of an option there. But you know, there's been some warning signs for me. I know, sure, you guys want to go a little more in depth, but I don't know if I'm fully concerned where I'm going to be dropping AJ Puck. But you know, I'm getting a little worried, and should I be if I'm the AJ Puck manager?
Yeah, I think it's like I forget, we kind of used the term a couple weeks ago where it's not, it's like bubbling, it's boiling, it's not like we're not ready, it's simmering, it's not ready to be, you know, we're not fully panicked yet. But I think there's just thing, like, I mean, all right, so a 3.5 xFIP, 1.23 WHIP, and a 29% K rate. All things that aren't bad, but there's a lot of good closers right now, and that's just, you know, how it is. And, you know, he's coming off a blown save last week. So that being the case, I feel like, you know, with him, he wasn't locked into the closer role. It's not like someone who I don't think Miami would be, you know, afraid to move on to, you know, switch things up there. So, you know, Tanner Scott's also pitched well lately, but yeah, Oscar Brazoban's been great. And, you know, there's just other options here. So, you know, it's like another bad week from Puck could be the end of his closer run there.
Dang, that's pretty ruthless. I feel pretty confident in him still. Just he's just striking out more batters than ever and walking fewer batters than ever. And that was sort of one of the things that held him back in the past in his career, was just not being able to throw enough strikes. And now he's down to a sub 5% walk rate, which is incredible, because that means his strikeout minus walk rate is nearly 25%, which is elite. And so that's usually the number that I'll look at. You know, it's very hard to trust any of the other numbers for relievers in general, because they have such small sample sizes, but he's currently at 14 innings. So it's really hard to trust really anything like the ground ball rate or FIP and that kind of stuff. So I usually go with the most rudimentary stuff and strikeout and walk rates. And right now those are the best of his career. So I have to feel pretty confident there. I don't feel too great about the rest of that bullpen. You mentioned a few guys that are pretty interesting, and Dylan Floro's looking great as usual, but I do feel pretty confident that, you know, they got him for a reason. That he's been doing it basically exactly what they've wanted him to do outside of that one blow up. So yeah, definitely don't consider him a top 10 closer in baseball right now, but I still think he's like top 15 or borderline top 15, which is definitely not somebody you're going to consider dropping anytime soon.
All right, we're going to take a little quick break. When we get back, we're going to start going into some of these holds risers. We talked enough about the closers and people are rising up in the ranks there. We'll dive into some setup men and some holds guys who are worth monitoring and possibly adding to your fantasy roster. All that and more on In the Pen. All right, a lot's been going around on Twitter about one particular Baltimore reliever with Yennier Cano. So we figured it's time we should actually talk about him and talk about why he's having the success he's having. And outside of just him, who are some other holds guys that we should be monitoring and possibly adding to our teams at this point in the season? So Rick's the floor is yours. Let's talk about Cano and maybe some other guys.
I know Jake was really excited about Cano. I'll leave Cano for Jake.
Then let's do it.
Yeah, I moved him up to my top holds, to the top of my holds ranks today. And I didn't think that was going to happen this quick in the season. But I mean, he is just, he's special what he's doing right now. So, but there's other guys that I think, you know, might be getting slept on a little bit right now. I mean, I really like, maybe I'm wrong here, but Matt Brash, he's got a 5.4 ERA and a 1.62 whip, which is gross. No one likes that, but he does have 33 strikeouts and 16.2 innings. And, you know, his stuff is just, it's unhittable. And it's not like the walks have been an issue. It's not like he's walking the yard. That's why he's, you know, his ratios are so bad. It's really just a lot of, you know, bad luck, really. And my concern is, and we didn't mention this, we probably should have, about Andrés Muñoz being out. He's going to be out a little bit longer than we had expected. So that kind of opens up that setup role. You know, Justin Topaz has been really good this year. He's definitely in the mix for one of those, you know, seventh, eighth inning roles. But I think Brash should be the other guy that we can count on for holds here. And I think, you know, the underlying metrics show that Brash should be better than what he is right now. And, you know, a 42.3% K rate is, you know, I'll take that any day, no matter what the ratios are in deeper, you know, holds leagues, and just, you know, hope that things turn, you know, not hope, but like expect that things are going to turn around. Cause, you know, a 2.04 XFIP to go with a 5.4 ERA. I mean, things will get better here. So Brash is definitely, if he's someone, you know, got rid of him in your holds leagues, then, you know, Go pick him up now before things turn around, because he won't be on the waiver wire long. I mean, okay, here, okay, I finally found his BABIP is 5.56 BABIP for the season for Brash. So that's obviously unsustainable. Really? And I don't know.
Hey, you don't know.
You know what? His BABIP over 2 years is 4.01. Maybe it's just what he does, but no, it's going to come down. And I think there's a really good reliever here that, you know, we're going to be talking about in the second half of the year.
For sure. Yeah. If you've ever watched him pitch, I know you guys have, but talking to the listeners, if you guys have ever watched him pitch, Brash has got some of the nastiest stuff in all of baseball. Like, not only does he throw upper 90s, but his curveball and his slider are disgusting to watch. Like, you do not watch those while you're at work. You might have to go talk to HR. But I totally agree. He's been super unlucky. A 556 BABIP is absolutely unsustainable and ridiculous. But yeah, he's definitely going to be underrated because of where his ERA currently stands. But, you know, we won't bury the lead anymore. We can talk about Yennier Cano now. Absolutely incredible at what he's been doing. He has not allowed a run yet through 18 and two thirds innings, which I think he's the only guy with at least 10 innings to do that. He's also got the lowest whip amongst anybody with at least 10 innings. Right now, that mark stands at 0.16. He's allowed, I think, four base runners, and none of them have been walks. Three hits and one hit by pitch, which means that he has a beautiful strikeout minus walk ratio of 38.6%, because he's struck out 38.6% of batters. So, big strikeout guy. He's a big guy in general, sort of same size as Felix Bautista. So if that's something that factors into your player development, he's definitely an imposing force on the mound. The thing is, like, his stuff isn't overpowering is the wrong word, because obviously it has been so far, but it's not like he's throwing like 100 miles an hour, or he's, I don't know, breaking off like nasty breaking balls. He's like a sinker changeup guy, and one is just faster than the other, and it works really well. Both of them have a ton of movement. The sinker and the changeup both rate out in the 90th percentile or higher on PLV. So both of those are great pitches. The sinker sort of a turbo sinker, so that's also allowed him to get a ton of ground balls. 78.1% ground ball rate right now. That's like Clay Holmes status of last year. He's third amongst relievers. So getting a lot of strikeouts, not walking anybody, two pitch guy where both of the pitches are clearly elite, and the ground ball rate just through the roof right now. And from a tweet from Ryland Dominguez on Twitter at Ryland Dominguez, he's pretty much just improved his sinker spin efficiency, which has made the pitch super good. Weighted Stuff Plus has the pitch as the best sinker in all of baseball. I think the best fastball in the game right now, which is bonkers. He throws from like a funky arm slot too, which definitely makes his stuff play up a little bit. But at 29, that's not really the age you think of breakout relievers, but that's really the case for him right now. And clearly the caveat, you know, he's not going to keep up a zero ERA throughout the season, but
wait, he's not?
Is this, no, it's not sustainable in that front, but is this level of like base runner prevention and hard hit prevention and ground balls, inducing all these ground balls and strikeouts and not walking anybody, is that sustainable? I think so. If he's got this sort of control over his pitches, obviously he's in a role right now, but I think he's got to be rostered in every league. And I think even in every league that doesn't even count holds, you know, I picked him up in a 12 team head to head categories league that does not count holds. And, you know, he's just there to improve my ratios and get strikeouts and vulture the saves when Felix Bautista isn't there. I think the biggest question right now, though, is Felix Bautista's job in jeopardy.
I hope not. Someone who has Felix Bautista in a few leagues, I'd like to see him keep the job. I don't think it's going to get to that level, but, you know, if he keeps this up, I guess it's always possible that they go the Tampa Bay route and it's a two-man show. But I would agree with you that in most leagues you need to get him 100% in saves, holds league, and, you know, your deeper leagues that are don't have, that are just saves ratio wise he's been pretty good. So I think he's getting very close to that must roster territory. I'd agree.
Yeah, he's been great, especially I've been, you know, him working multiple innings lately in some of these games. I mean, he's been a great find for all of you who are in points leagues. He's like the reliever to have there, because He's going to get saves. He's going to get holds. He's going to work multiple innings. He's going to get strikeouts, and he's not going to allow base runners. So he's a great holds points league target.
So let's keep it going here. I know Cano's the main guy that deserves to be rostered, and Matt Brash is kind of Rick's favorite. So outside of Matt Brash, Jake, who's your next favorite in terms of a rising holds guy, someone that you're really keeping a close eye on, want to try and add in a vast majority of your leagues?
Honestly, and that same note that Rick was talking about guys for holds leagues, I think Nick Martinez, or for points leagues, I think Nick Martinez is actually pretty interesting since he moved to the bullpen. We know that he was a starter to begin the year. He sort of did the same thing last year, starter to reliever to starter. And I feel pretty confident that he is better as a reliever than as a starter. He's pretty meh as a starter and pretty awesome as a reliever, to be honest. But he's not like a huge strikeout guy, but his ability to go multiple innings and just be really solid in a bullpen that has lost a lot of guys right now. They had, I forgot his name. Who was the guy that they had? Robert Suarez. They had Robert Suarez at the beginning of the year. He's gone down. Steven Wilson started off the year really strong, and he's sort of faltered a little bit recently. The same can be said about Luis Garcia. So it's like their top three holds options have now been either fallen off recently or injured. So that's allowed Nick Martinez to really jump up quickly and then grab three holds across the past week. His stuff is not going to overwhelm anybody, but his ability to get ground balls and induce weak contact is super valuable. And I just love the fact that either he's going to be pitching like the eighth inning, like he could vulture a save, or he can come in there and be that long guy because we know he's pretty stretched out. So he can go multiple innings if necessary. And I feel like that's pretty valuable across a lot of leagues.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued with that, and we know the Padres are going to be right up there, and with all the underperformance, I think Nick Martinez is a great name to keep an eye on. Rick, anybody else you want to throw out there as your favorite holds candidate at this point in the season?
There's a couple names on this list that we've talked about, and but I think we mentioned him earlier, who Oscar Brazaban for Marlins. Might not be a huge strikeout guy. Doesn't miss, he's not going to lead the league and miss bats anytime soon, but he has done a great job. He's got a sinker, cutter, changeup mix. He's done a great job limiting hard contact this year. Only a 14.4% hard contact rate, which is, led to a great 2.44 xERA. His ground ball rate's up a little bit, over 52%. And, even if he's not in a closer role, I think he's started to work himself into being a seventh, eighth inning guy in Miami. And it's, I remember looking at some of the, underlying metrics from guys last year, and he pitched in 27 games and had an 18.2% swinging strike rate last year, which kind of caught my eye entering the year. And then, I wasn't sure whether or not he was even going to make the team out of spring training. So it's great to see him at 33 years old. We were talking about it in the Discord today. It's, he's a rookie at 33 years old. Poor guys. He's not going to hit free agency until he's 39. But, it's great to see him kind of breaking out in, a small sample, but still a breakout. I guess we're in May now. So I think, holds leagues, he's someone to definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I'll be a homer too and throw out one other guy up. Ian Hamilton is a name who's been really, you mentioned him on your holds list, and it's been extremely impressive. You saw when Michael King couldn't go back-to-back games, they brought him in for the save. The other day, they brought him in a very high leverage, first and third, nobody out against the A's in a two-run game. He got out of the inning. That's Slambio and just everything out there. You go to his Savant page or his pitcherless player page, everything's in the red. 82nd percentile in average velocity, 84th percentile in X batting average, 90th percentile in K percentage, 83rd percentile in chase rate. He's striking people out, limiting hard contact, everything you want from a reliever, and he's quickly moving up in terms of the circle of trust for Aaron Boone. So while King's probably the best reliever in the pen right now, and Clay Holmes, I don't think, is going fully away in terms of saves or holds, Ian Hamilton's going into that. We talk about Ron Marinaccio taking over the Michael King role. Ian Hamilton might be the guy who gets into that role of what they wanted King to be from last season, what Loaisiga was supposed to be, and just be that high leverage reliever. And I think the Yankees will turn things around and get you some more save opportunities soon. So I think Ian Hamilton's a name that maybe you don't add fully yet, but circle him, put him on the watch list. What we've seen so far from him has been extremely impressive.
Yeah, that was like one of those guys that gets a save, and you're like, wait, who? Yeah. Who got the save?
Great find by the Yankees, though. I mean, this is, we talk about like, I mean, guys that come out of nowhere. Here's another one in Hamilton. I wasn't sure if I believed it yet right away either, but I mean, we're a month into the season. There's 20 innings pitched already for him. And yeah, like you said, everything's red. Everything's still red. He, you know, fastball velocity looks good, 96 miles per hour. And, yeah, he's been able to get a bunch of swing and misses this year. So it's, you know, good find by the Yankees and someone they really needed, you know, they really need, because that bullpen is hurting right now.
Mm-hmm. One guy that's not on the list that we have on our rundown that I think is worth sort of mentioning just because of a change in skills, maybe not skills, but a change in approach is Nate Pearson. I know he was like one of the top starting pitching prospects, sort of in like the same vein as Michael Kopech, where just like he threw really hard as a starter. And that like used to be really cool like 5 years ago. And now is like pretty normal, but now he's really transitioned full time into the bullpen role. And his big setback in the past was always just walking way too many batters. Like his previous two times in the minors or in the majors, in 2021 and 2020, he walked more than 16% of batters in both instances. And so far he's cut that, he's walked a quarter of that many batters. Obviously it's been five innings thus far, but to see him throwing strikes, that's pretty promising. He's not getting as many strikeouts because obviously he's not throwing out of the zone as much, but to see him walking that few batters is pretty interesting, because that was like the one thing that was like, all right, well, he throws hard, he strikes out a lot of guys, he's got a lot of potential, but you know, he walks the whole world. And now it's like, I don't know, he could jump up pretty high in that bullpen pretty quickly. Obviously Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano are ahead of him, but we're talking about holds, and I think Nate Pearson is a guy like that, and he obviously also has the ability to go multiple innings if necessary.
I really like that call, and I'm not saying Romano's going to lose a job, but we've seen him blow up a save or two recently. And so while he's still the guy, there's a lot of room for moving up in that Toronto pen. I think Pearson, I've liked a lot what I've seen from him. So that's a really good, call there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I would say, he's only been up for like about five innings, but yeah, that's definitely a name to keep an eye on, because there's a ton of talent there. So yeah, good call out.
Before we go into a break, I want to give a much deserved congratulations to Kenley Jansen for his 400th career save and, you know, touching 99 miles per hour, which is something we never thought we'd say. Kenley Jansen, we could have that debate of it's probably going around right now. Is Kenley Jansen a Hall of Famer? And it's probably saved for another show, but you know, much as our shout, he probably could have been someone that we put up in the rising in the ranks. What we've seen from him this year has been extremely impressive. Rick, you've been watching his team real closely. You had some skepticism about the 99 miles per hour now, but
No, I got up first of all, cause I talked, you know, I was a little down on him last week, and I have to say that I deserve to eat some crow for that, because he has been great since then. And, you know, as long as he stays healthy, I mean, I don't think we're going to see him throwing 99 the rest of the year, but it's, you know, it's great to see. He's made some subtle changes, or maybe not so subtle changes, to his delivery. And he's a little bit more balanced, a little bit direct to the plate, and not, you know, I think that's really helped him out with his velocity additions this year. So that being said, maybe I'm still too low on him. I think, you know, more maybe yesterday he was just, you know, amped up for say 400 pitching in Atlanta where he was last year. Who knows? But I mean, I still, you know, Jansen's going to be probably higher up on the list next week, as long as nothing bad happens this weekend. But there's still just, you know, there's a lot of good relievers in front of him. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, and 99 with quotation marks. He was 98.7. Sorry to take that away from him. But yeah, you mentioned that the gun was hot too. So even that might be questionable. So, but yeah, still pretty incredible. I was telling you guys before the podcast that my co-host for Free Baseball was just like, when did Kenley Jansen start throwing 99? And I was like, yesterday. He does not throw 99. But that it is pretty incredible to see a guy of his age who's thrown so many innings to just have a night like that. He seems like a guy that's like always relied super heavily on his mechanics, because that was like a thing when he was with the Dodgers where he was just losing velocity and it just seemed like he just needed the time to figure out his mechanics. And I think one of the big things was we were really concerned about the pitch clock with him because he was like the slowest moving reliever or even pitcher in all of baseball. And you know, to his credit, it hasn't affected him like we thought it would. And so it's pretty impressive. And, you know, I'll just answer that Hall of Fame question. I think it's a yes.
Yeah, I think it's very borderline. I want to see how the last couple of years of his career wrap up. But he keeps things up. He gets, you know, he keeps up with another few years of 30 saves. He gets to the 450 save mark. And I think that puts him pretty squarely in the conversation and a likely yes. So congratulations to Kenley Jansen. I'll join Rick in eating some crow. I don't have him in any leagues, and the way the Red Sox are playing and the way he's pitching, I regret it. I wish I had a few shares of Kenley Jansen, something I didn't expect to fully save this year. So we'll take one final break. When we get back, we got a few mailbag questions we want to get to, and we'll wrap up the show with another episode of everyone's favorite segment, Who's That Closer? All right, we've threw out on Discord a few for some mailbags, and we got a few responses from the Discord, so we want to make sure we address them before we wrap the show. First one is from Little Piranha. Is Alzolay finally the closer in Chicago? Jake, I'm going to let you take this one because you've had the most to say about the Cubs' close situation this season. So what's your current read? Is Alzolay a favorite for Chicago at this point?
I say yes. He's definitely the guy that I'm targeting in leagues right now. So I sure hope so because my leagues are pretty reliant on it right now. But, you know, he's not had the best skills in that bullpen. I think Mark Leiter Jr. obviously pitching incredibly, but we've sort of had this conversation throughout the year about the Cubs bullpen, about how they're super right-handed heavy, and not only right-handed heavy, but literally just only have right-handers in that bullpen. And Mark Leiter Jr. fits that role as well. He is also right-hander, but Rick made the astute observation that Leiter Jr. is sort of the team's lefty specialist because he has reverse splits. So he's better against left-handers than right-handers. And the fact that they have no other guys in the bullpen that are lefties sort of pinholes Leiter into a role where he sort of has to be that lefty specialist to get the left-handers out. And while that doesn't, obviously that doesn't preclude him from being the closer, you know, you could still use a left-hander. You're the only left-hander in a bullpen as the closer, but it does sort of take away from that. And also you have the consideration that if he is considered the best reliever in the bullpen, maybe he's the high leverage guy instead. But I think Albert Alzolay is the closer of the future. He's been very solid this season. I think he's got some more strikeout potential left in the bag. He's at like 26% right now, but I think he can pick it up a little bit. But he's been great. He also can go multiple innings as well. He's the guy that I'm targeting right now. I think it's difficult to count out Michael Fulmer fully as well. But yeah, those three, Leiter, Alzolay, and Fulmer are the ones that are candidates right now. And I think I'm going with the young gun.
Yeah, Jake nailed it. I have nothing else to say.
Perfect. Yeah, I think another guy, if he's out there in your leagues, Alzolay needs to be the guy you stash at this point. So Rick, we'll turn this one over to you. How much concern is there for Josh Hader after he's blown his last two save chances? Do you have any concern of him, or, you know, did you move him in the ranks at this point?
I don't think so. If I did, it was minimal. I have him. I still think I have him at like three. Yeah, I think that I'm not concerned yet. I think it's, you know, a little, I want to say fluky, but, you know, it's not like he's getting blown up. It's just been, you know, hits, one home run and then a walk and a hit. And, you know, I think he'll be okay. And they need him to be. I mean, they're not going to run there. There's no options there. This is Josh Hader's going to be the closer no matter what. I mean, he would have to he'd have to have basically do what he did last year from July to August. But I don't think we're there yet. The velocity is down this year, but I think he's been a better pitcher overall, so I'm not too concerned with anything right now. I mean, the walk rate's low, it's high, he's always, you know, had a propensity to walk people, and it's annoying, but it hasn't really killed him in the past. That's not his big issue. It's the home runs, which, you know, one this month, the one when that blown save. Right for now, I think it's just chalk it up as, you know, a bad game, and I think we're moving forward with him as a top closer still.
Yeah, you're really concerning me by like even suggesting last year, because I totally forgot that he was like the best closer in baseball for like the first 2 months or so, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere just fell apart. And did we ever really figure out what was the problem? Was it really just like a slightly different release point that made him like go from the best pitcher in baseball to the worst pitcher in baseball? Like it's pretty concerning that just like that small of a tweak can turn him from somebody that's super elite to somebody that's not super elite, or is bad, as a matter of fact. Yeah. But it's concerning that this is happening this early in the season. But right now you sort of got to bet on track record rather than just that few month struggles last year.
I think the one thing, though, I don't want to say concerning, because I didn't have exactly the highest expectations for him, but he's not like going back to being that 2021, that the early year Josh Hader. I mean, his strikeout rate is 36%, which is great, but that's like, you know, we were used to him being in the 40s, and, you know, a 3.71 xFIP's good, but it's, you know, swinging strike rate's still under 15%. I mean, he's not the guy he used to be, but he's still pretty damn good. And I think just based on the team he pitches for, having the job security, I think he's still a top tier closer, just not the guy he was.
That was also from Lil Piranha in the Discord. Next one is actually two questions from Deaner Williams in the Discord. The first is, can Pierce Johnson be valuable in the same way that Daniel Bard last year, even with Daniel Bard still on the Rockies? I feel like every week we have to mention Daniel Bard, even though it's time we don't want to. So what's your readout in Colorado? Is Pierce Johnson going to be this year's Daniel Bard?
I don't think he has the same... I mean, we've been down on Bard since the beginning of the show, or since the beginning of this year. But I don't think Pierce Johnson has the type of upside that Bard at least had last year, or showed last year. I think, you know, Johnson really relies on his curveball, and his fastball is not good, and not having a good fastball pitching at Coors is definitely going to be an issue. It's going to lead to problems eventually. So I think I wouldn't be too optimistic about him. He definitely has that role there, and he's pitched well enough to, you know, there's nothing to say to be concerned about yet, but it's not something I would expect to stick. I don't know if you feel differently, Jake.
No, I don't really want any relievers that pitch in Colorado, for sure. That's like the biggest thing there. But it is nice, you know, that he has the role. Even in the past, when Daniel Bard was pitching really well, I was never, if he was available for trade, I was never like, oh, give me some Daniel Bard. Because just pitching in Coors just makes it impossible to trust anyone. There's a reason why when Nick is doing the starting pitcher streaming rankings, even the aces that are pitching in Coors, there's like questionable starts. It's hard to trust anybody pitching in the worst pitcher's park in all of baseball. But yeah, I mean, Pierce Johnson, he basically just does one thing well, and that's like strike batters out more than normal. He just like walks too many guys, and that's like the big thing with pitching in Coors and walking a lot of guys is a bad combo, because like when you do blow up, when you do allow that one-off home run or whatever, it's going to do damage, because there's going to be guys on base, and that's going to be pretty concerning. The only thing that's like comfortable there is like if you've got great ratios on your team already and you're not really super worried about that, like you can stomach a guy with a 4+ ERA that's probably going to stick throughout the year and you just need those saves and strikeouts, then yeah, this is the perfect guy for you, because I don't see anybody else taking over the role, especially with the way Bud Black likes to work. He's very old school in that he trusts the veteran relievers, and he's not going to like remove a guy from the role unless it's like gets really bad. And so far Pierce Johnson has been about what you would expect pitching in Coors. But yeah, so I think there's just that one situation where it's like if you've got great ratios elsewhere and you just need saves and strikeouts, then this is the guy for you.
And last one from Diener Williams. I think we'll all give an answer for this one. Pick one closer whose job is safe right now that will not be closing by August 1st. So, Rick, we'll start with you. Give us a closer who...
You had to start with me. Oh, no. Yep. That's a tough one. I don't know why. It's just, we mentioned him earlier, and you might be onto something, and that's Felix Bautista, maybe, because the walk rate's not sustainable right now. It's 17.6%. I don't care how many guys he's striking out. That walk rate needs to come down, with especially with Cano on his heels right now. So that's kind of my big swing at this, because it could really be anyone, but I'm worried about what Bautista, his walk issues over the last few games.
Jake, what about you?
Yeah, I guess it's me next. That was actually a very good call, because I was considering that one for sure. And I'm just making sure I look through all the bullpen so I don't choose somebody that I don't actually think. I mean, we've talked about guys. This question is more so like a guy that's like really solid right now. That's like, it's sort of like a hot take.
I was going to say, yeah, I could say Zach Jackson, but I mean, what's the fun?
Yeah, right. And I'm just like, yeah, I could say Kyle Finnegan. Like, there's lots of guys that you could say, yeah, they're probably going to lose the role at some point. But I think I'm going to go with a really hot take one. And I think it's Jordan Romano.
I was going to say that. Okay, good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, he's very solid. I think he's like a great reliever. I don't think he's an elite reliever. He sort of gets that designation from fantasy managers and fantasy analysts because he's on such a good team. The Blue Jays are a great team, and he's like the clear-cut closer, and that just makes him an elite fantasy option. I don't think that makes him an elite closer. And when you have guys like Eric Swanson, who's doing exactly what he did last year, just being absolutely incredible, and the previously guy that we mentioned about Nate Pearson rising up the ranks, there's a little bit of competition there, competition that he didn't have the last couple of years. And if he continues to be more great than elite, then, or goes the other way and is more okay than great, then there's definitely a consideration there. Just because he's not striking out 30% of batters, he's close to it, and he's prone to blowups every once in a while. We saw him blow his last save, but just the fact that there are a couple guys there that are trustworthy enough or have the potential to be elite relievers definitely has me thinking that, if Jordan Romano goes the way of Josh Hader or Taylor Rogers last year, where it's a guy that we've trusted for so long and then out of nowhere just starts struggling, they have options there, and they're a team that's trying to be competitive. So they're not going to let him flounder for months on end while they're trying to make the postseason.
Yeah, I'll say Evan Phillips. I mean, he's been rising up. He's someone we mentioned, not from his own performance, but we still have Daniel Hudson waiting in the wings, and we know the Dodgers are not going to hesitate to make a splash deadline if they need to. I could see them bringing in a pretty big reliever, so maybe it's not as hot takey, but I think he's in Rick's top 10, so I think that's a fairly safe reliever. So I'll say Evan Phillips is someone to monitor for this. But we'll wrap up the show, as we've been doing the past few weeks, with another episode of everyone's favorite game show, Who's That Closer? So, Jake, take it away.
Sure. Yes. And I already know that you guys sort of figured this one out pretty quickly, so hopefully the listeners can do the same. So I guess I'll just run through all of the hints, and then you guys tell me the answer, since you guys already know, surprisingly off. I put the first hint, and Rick was like, oh, I know who it is. I was like,
this is right in my wheelhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. Same. But yeah, let's start it off. This closer was drafted by the A's with the 40th overall pick in the 2004 draft out of the University of Texas. He was a legend at the University of Texas. He's a right-handed pitcher. He debuted with Oakland in April of 2005. His nickname was Larry. I still don't really get that one. Maybe somebody can explain it to me later. But his accolades include winning AL Rookie of the Year in his debut season in 2005. He was also a two-time All-Star, and he finished 23rd in AL MVP voting in that rookie year and 25th in NL MVP voting in 2009. This closer pitched for four teams, Oakland, obviously, but also Colorado, San Diego Padres, and the Los Angeles Angels. He recorded 30-plus saves five times in his career, and I think he had 40-plus two times. And his best season actually came in 2014. where he pitched for two teams, the Padres and the Angels. That year, he had 59 and a third innings pitch with 57 strikeouts to go along with a 1.37 ERA, a 0.94 whip, and 41 saves. And throughout his career, he had a 2.95 ERA, very impressive, sub-3 ERA across the amount of innings that he pitched. And he had 324 saves, which surprisingly places this guy 20th all-time. And who is this guy?
That would be Houston Street.
Yep,
A low-key legend, yeah. I mean, the Texas was like where, I mean, he was just so dominant there. That was such a fun team, watching the College World Series back in his days there.
Yeah, I got it as soon as I saw the rookie of the year. Just the Yankee fan, I remember it was him, and that was the year Robinson Cano debuted for the Yankees. Being a little, you know, an eight-year-old, upset that my guy didn't win rookie of the year, but... I did not realize he was 20th all-time. I didn't realize he had that many saves. I kind of think of him as like a, not a one and done guy, but just like a few good years and he was done. I didn't realize how consistent he truly was. Seeing that, I remember him a lot differently than his career actually was.
It's kind of like a little bit of a Mark Melanson type career where you kind of surprised he's pitched for a bunch of teams, but he's, you know, getting saves for pretty much everywhere he was. And yeah, like a really, really good solid career. Not a big strikeout guy, but got the job done wherever he was.
Yep.
Yeah. Think about it. How would you telling people, yeah, our closer's going to get 57 Ks in 59 innings? I don't know if that plays in 2023.
No, definitely not.
I mean, Emmanuel Clase might be on that route. So we'll see.
This is very true. So that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. As always, you can find all our work on pitcherlist.com. You have the reliever ranks, closers, holds guys, close saves plus holds, anything you want for relievers, and of course, fantasy baseball related, pitcherlist.com. Rick does a great job with those ranks. Jake does a lot of hard work with those, with the daily reliever articles, along with everyone else on our relief pitching staff. Jake, you have any other, articles you're currently working on? I know you've done a lot outside of relievers lately, so I want to give you a chance to plug that.
Yeah, I think my next one won't come out until the beginning of June, though I'll try to fit something in before then. But I think I'm going to be writing about guys that are rising and falling in the strikeout and walk departments, probably both for hitters, pitchers, and or starters and relievers. So that'll be definitely something that's worth looking into, just because I feel like those are just some of the most reliable numbers to look at. But yeah, outside of that, just continuing with the First Pitch podcast on the weekends. Definitely give that a listen and go check out my other podcast, Free Baseball. You can find it on my website, crumplerbaseball.com. But yeah, just give me a follow on Twitter as well. I could use the followers at Jake Crumpler.
And Rick, where can our listeners find you on Twitter? Because I think it's been a while since we plugged that.
Yeah, you can find me at I am Rick Graham on Twitter. But definitely go follow Jake, follow Kalen, follow our Twitter in the Pen Pod. We're trying to build a little bit more of a, you know, thing there, so we could use some followers. But yeah, follow these guys as well.
Yeah, you can find me at Kalen_Elsliger. I need to do a little better on Twitter. A lot of it is just retweeting, hey, I recorded a podcast today. So, but I need to start finding some more tweets, but, you know, finding what we're all doing, trying to find our way on the Twitter sphere. But I need to do a little bit more with that. But like I said, a lot of good work coming out on PitcherList. And as always, I'll do my usual plug. Join PL Plus. You know, you have a lot of great stuff. You got the PLV, the PL projections, DFS, join our Discord, have access to the staff 24/7, including daily chats with a member of the staff. We do dynasty chats. We've done reliever chats. We've done just general going deep chats, anything and everything. We have a staff member available to discuss it, a channel for everything baseball and outside of baseball. So it's a great community, and it's definitely a lot of fun to be a part of. So that's all we got for this episode of In the Pen. I am Callan, joined as always by Rick and Jake, and we'll talk to you guys next week.